You're listening to the Walt Weekly Podcast with our host, Walter Latham, and our co-host, Michelle Sweeney McCombs. Voices in Society Impacting the Culture.
Thanks for joining another episode of the Walt Weekly Podcast, hosted by Walter Latham and Michelle Sweeney McCombs. There is one major issue. We were going to have two with COVID, but I think we just want to focus on the election and what's been happening over the last couple of days. Now, to me, why can't this man just concede? I mean, you got Georgia, Biden came from behind. You got Pennsylvania, looked like Biden's going to win that. It's not that hard. I mean, Hillary had to concede. All right, so it's time for Donald Trump, the orange man, to put on his big pants and say, okay, I'm conceding, but I'm not going to quit. I may go to court, but you know, all right. But to be honest, I am tired of this now because, you know, Biden at 263 for the last couple of days and Trump at 214, 213. I'm kind of tired. I don't know about y'all guys, but I am tired. But as is customary, we will return to the expertise and knowledge of the panelists. And we need their guidance. That's what we really need. We also like to update any, and we can get around to it if we can. We're going to talk about any updates to restrictions around COVID because I understand that, you know, there have been some spikes. And we may want to talk about that if we get the chance. All right. So, hey, we just got Stevie in the house, Michelle. Can you believe it? All right. Hey, Steve, thanks for joining the show. All right. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle so she can introduce our esteemed panel. And welcome back, Michelle.
Hey, welcome, Walter. Thank you. Thank you for that. Welcome to everyone that's joining on this live. I'd like to welcome on today's Friday Live, Gene Edwards, male district leader, 79th Assembly District of the Bronx, New York. Gregory Coleman, North Carolina, CEO of Illumination Media and Technology. Ernest J. Robinson, out of Washington, D.C., senior consultant for B, Ernest Leadership and Professional Consultant. We also have that just joined in, Stephen A. Smith, out of Atlanta, Georgia. He's also an educator. I will post everyone's handles, websites, and information in the below message board. And thank you to our audience for joining us. Thank you. Please follow, like, and share our podcast as we are speaking. Thank you, Walter. You can take over.
Okay. Right. Down a little bit.
Okay.
You were here.
All right. We all pumped up. Everybody's ready for this exciting topic post-election. Let's get it on, y'all. Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid to cut in. This is just freelance, freestyling. Everybody
Be freestyling.
But do what you want to do. Be respectful, of course, of others. And, you know, step in, jump in, say, hey, raise your hand, tag somebody, whatever you want to do, and speak your piece. Go ahead. I'm going on mute.
Thank you. All right. Anyway, I mean, when we were, Michelle and I were preparing the show notes for this show, you know, the news is just with a moving target. You know, the events, and there was nothing concrete. Every day was different. I know on Tuesday night, like I went to bed, you know, trying to mentally adjust to another 4 years of Trump. I'm saying to myself, can I live through another 4 years of Trump? Well, I got no choice. Let me just focus on, you know, I just turn inward, you know. But when I woke up the next day, things had changed. Biden had, you know, had gained some ground. Every day seems a little bit better now. Like we stuck, you know. Like Groundhog's Day, you know, every day you wake up is the same thing. And I think that's what we've been in the last couple of days. But anyway, let me congratulate our elected officials in the Bronx. I heard the Bronx did well. And I'm going to call out Gene and congratulate him on a job well done on getting out the vote and being successful. So, Gene, Congratulations, man.
Well, first, I would like to thank you and Michelle and the other panelists for having me on board, because like I always say to you guys when I'm on, is that you didn't have to choose me. You could have called somebody else. So the fact that you selected me, you know, I thank you for that. Richie Torres is the first openly gay Black Latino congressman out of the Bronx, and one of the youngest. I think the guy is like 32, 33. And the reason why I would like to highlight Richie Torres is not just for the accomplishment of becoming the first openly gay Black Latino man to the U.S. Congress, but the fact that I've met with Richie Torres the first Saturday of August 2019, and Richie said to me that he wanted to run for U.S. Congress, and he wanted me to be on a ticket with him as the district leader. So I actually ran on a ticket with Richie Torres. So his accomplishment is near and dear to my heart, because I know how hard I fought for him, and I know his integrity and what he stood for. And he gave me the endorsement for district leader, a public endorsement. So I would like everybody to like just give an applause for Richie Torres.
That's awesome. Congratulations on that.
And his accomplishment, and knowing that, you know, to have a son of the South Bronx and the U.S. Congress, where I actually have access to him, it only helps to enable me to do a better job as a district leader here in the 79th Assembly District, knowing that I have a resource like Congressman-elect Torres in Washington, D.C. So thank you, Walter and Michelle.
Yes, we'd like to congratulate Torres also. Hopefully you can have him join us. I know he's going to be pretty busy until early next year at minimum, but hopefully he could stop by and chat with us a little bit. Okay, we would like to thank all of you guys, because you guys had a hand in getting out the vote. And we broke records. We broke records. I mean, there were almost as many votes cast in mail-in than it was in 2016, all right, between mail-in and early voting. So I would like to thank you guys, because you were very effective. The proof is in the pudding, all right, especially in Pennsylvania and Georgia. So can I get a shout-out for Pennsylvania and Georgia?
Shout out.
But you know, I would like to thank you guys, because y'all guys were heavily involved in getting the vote, especially the youth vote. You know what I mean, and this goes out to Ernest, this goes out to Greg, and especially it also goes out to Gene. So I want to thank y'all guys. Y'all guys did a tremendous job. And, you know, if I was a drinking man, I'd throw that champagne bottle up and we would toast. All right. Next thing I want to talk about is, you know, the irony. You know, Trump wants to stop counting where he is ahead in the state that he is ahead, and continuing those he is behind. Now, how stupid is that? Talk to me. Tell me.
I think that with the way that things are playing out, you can't have your cake and eat it too, right? It is incredibly, like you said, ironic to be able to look up and in Arizona, where he was losing. So all of this was actually the catalyst for the tirade and rant, was because a TV network had called out Arizona, and his camp went ballistic over it. Now, this was a TV network that is typically friendly.
I'm here to say, what TV network was that?
uh, I didn't want to put Walt Weekly in any jeopardy, so I
no, go ahead.
Okay, so Fox News came out and had called Arizona. Now, typically, for those who may not necessarily be if anyone's been watching, you should already know how projections go. Projections have nothing to do with what is actually going to happen. However, they came out and they made the call. So he's behind. But then Joe Biden's ahead and still currently ahead. But in Pennsylvania and in Georgia, Joe Biden was behind and Trump was ahead. He wanted the votes to stop being counted in Pennsylvania and in Georgia. And he wanted the votes to continue to count in Arizona. And that's not how democracy works. That's not how things go. And I applaud all of the registrars, all of the elected officials, every volunteer. Our hats off and congratulations go out to you all as you all are still continuing to count, because this job is so very important and vital to the way the democracy goes. But yes, absolutely insane to sit there and say, no, stop counting here, but keep counting over here. No, that's not how things work.
Good. Good.
It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it's comical. I mean, we know all those gyrations are basically for his acolytes. The logic behind his statements is just astounds me. I mean, so like Ernest said, count them over here, but stop counting them over here. That's ridiculous. That's his narcissism. Pretty much that says, you know, again, that he can do what he wants to do. It goes according to what he says, not according to what, you know, what the law is, what's constitutional.
That's a cheater.
Yeah, but I'm saying, so he's saying the Dems cheated in republically controlled Georgia and the same thing in republically controlled Arizona. And then he's going to point to Wisconsin, who, you know, over the summer, they were heavily suppressing the vote. So right. they're going to act against you. So his babbling is only to delegitimize. All it does is delegitimize the other Republican victories. I mean, there were Republicans that did pretty well. So him saying that they cheated. So what, did they cheated for you, but not for them? Or they cheated for them, but not for you? Well, which way is it? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Anybody else has anything to say along about that one?
Well, actually, no. I mean, and to Greg's point, I mean that the whole situation is that you had a number of House seats that had been lost by the Democratic Party that were won by the Senate. And then you had Senate seats that were also up for election, but then that also wound up being split. I think currently right now there are going to be several runoffs, two congressional seats. I think there may be one Senate seat that might be up for grabs out in Arizona where they've contested it. But the Democratic candidate actually won. Kelly, the astronaut, actually is already in the lead. But to Greg's point, How do you actually only cut out just the president and then everyone else is winning and legitimate? So then, and here's an interesting question goes, is that if you want to recount, do you throw out the other ballots for all of the candidates on that ticket? Do all of the every congressional seat, every city council, every judge, every sheriff, every person that was on those ballots, do you toss those ballots? Do those stop getting counted? Do you do a recount where it affects the entire election? And I think that some, even for those who are in support of or against the recount, may not understand the implications as to what it's talking about, because again, he's not the only person running for office.
I was wondering about that. Because down the line, normally, it's, you know, they vote down the line unless someone has a specific interest, but normally it'll be down the line.
But he shows. So he doesn't care about them.
You know, he doesn't.
It's only about him.
Scorch earth. He'll burn the whole thing down if he can't win.
Exactly. That's right.
Letitia's waiting for him. That's the reason he'll do any and everything that he could possibly do.
Yeah, exactly.
To make sure that, because he's got so many indictments that are on the table that he has been.
She's going to be at the door when he gets escorted out.
Exactly. He's been insulated. He's been insulated because of executive power, and Letitia is set up. He's overinflated property for decades in order to secure loans. There's all kinds of tax evasion, tax issues, which is why 5 years we've been told that he is, all of his taxes are being scrutinized, and he couldn't reveal or release his taxes. I mean, he's being audited over and over and over again.
Yeah, That's
the gist of it. The man knows that on January 20th at 12 noon, he is as vulnerable as he's ever been in his life.
And well, that I mean,
is why he'll do anything to keep power.
Well, don't forget now, you got Cyrus Vance. He's working on the anti-money laundering, case. All right. And you also have the Southern District of New York. They're also working on the case in addition, to Letitia. So the guy is going to face the music once he gets out of office. He knows that. And I think that's the catalyst for him to try to hold on the best he can, try to delay until he can get on an airplane to leave. That's my opinion. All right. But I do know there are three different entities that are looking to prosecute him. All right. That have evidence of wrongdoing.
Absolutely. He is he's hanging on to that office for dear life. They're going to actually have to pull him out. But
what Biden, you going to do when they come for you?
Biden issued a statement today and said, "Hey, listen, we will escort you out," and they will.
Yeah, they will. I got no choice. Yeah, I would like to see that. I would definitely like to see that. Escort him, and then they just arrest him right outside. because. He's been, it's a lot of pending.
Yeah. He's gonna drag this out, though, and it's just gonna be a shit show. He's gonna incite people, the shame of it. He's gonna drag other people in with his foolishness.
And that's the sad part about it, Chris. That's the sad part about it is, innocent people are gonna become victims, whether
Yeah, they were already getting arrested in Nevada. They were trying to storm the polling places. It's ridiculous what he's inciting, the way he says it. He knows what he's saying. They're doing funny things in Philadelphia and Detroit. He picks the places where it's mostly African American. He knows what he's doing.
I was going to illustrate that point, Chris. I mean, he named two cities in that last night, both with heavy African American populations. And what's amazing is from the 2016 campaign to the 2020 campaign, he's more than doubled the amount of African Americans that have voted for him. It is just astounding to me.
Well, I don't know who was about to speak, but I agree with Chris, and I also think that it's going to be a sad occasion, because it's not only just the people that he's bringing down, but it's also the image of the United States that has been tarnished for the last 5 years. During the previous election, all the way up until now. The one thing about the inauguration, and for someone who have never been there before, or even to see a swearing in ceremony of elected officials, it is actually a powerful thing to actually see the transfer of power, of authority, and what it actually means, symbolically what it means. It's always been a position of strength that we've had. The functionality of democracy is one of the things, one of the cornerstones of the United States. And again, it's one of those things that my hope is that Joe Biden will return back to the United States. But a key piece of that is the peaceable transfer. So the presence
I got you.
But the presence of the outgoing president not being there is going to be something that there's going to be some residual effects of that for these next 4 years.
He's sullied that office. He's going to sully that whole process. He doesn't care. It is despicable and disgusting. I had a young lady, a white young lady that I know for a long time. She calls me quite often during this whole campaign. She calls me and checks in with me. And she said the one thing that she was voting for was to just have some kind of normalcy and wake up without chaos every single day. She said, I don't even care what kind of administration Biden is going to have. I just want to wake up one morning where there is no chaos and no nonsense. Every single day with this man has been exhausting. That's what she told me.
Okay.
And that's how people feel.
Gene, can you speak to that a little bit about, you know, from your perspective, about this transition when it happens, or you know, something that should be a normal practice, and we're not getting that, and we don't expect that. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I was well prepared for this. If you can recall, about maybe 4 episodes ago, it might have been longer. I think it was after I had Senator Bailey and Councilwoman Gibson on. I said that the primary was on June 23rd, but I didn't find out that I won until July 24th. It took them 31 days to count all the absentee ballots in the Bronx. So I was of the mind, if it took them 31 days to count all the absentee ballots in the Bronx, and there are only 2.2 million people in the Bronx, it's going to take a lot longer than that to count all the absentee ballots and the affidavits, and then the absentee ballots coming from the military veterans overseas, which I've done before. So I wasn't looking for any type of announcement until close to Thanksgiving, because I figured there would be a few Supreme Court challenges. But no, I wasn't looking for 270. To be honest, I'm surprised that Biden is even at 253. I am.
Yeah.
I am. I didn't think it would be that high. So those are my thoughts on that.
Okay.
He stretched out that lead in Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania.
Well, I mean,
it's up to 16,000 now.
Oh, it did go up?
It's up to 16,000.
Well, I mean, on both the red and the blue sides, there are states. This is Steve Smith. And what I was saying was, I said that, you know, both the Republican and the Democratic Party already know what states are going to be in the bank on both sides. You know, New York, New Jersey, California are always going to go Democratic. It's just been that way forever and a day. You know, South Dakota, Montana, North Dakota. Some of those states are always going to go Republican. They already know that that's the way that goes down. So, you know, the emphasis was placed on the blue wall, which is Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And in 2016, by very, very narrow margins, all three of those states were flipped. Those had typically been under Democratic control. And the fact that, Vice President Biden, or should I say President-elect Biden, was able to flip those back to Democratic control was so key. It was so important. When we were watching the results initially on Tuesday night, even states like Texas, which always going red were looking good, because Dallas and Houston and San Antonio and Austin, Texas showed up, the metropolitan areas. It was very, very heavy votes. But all those people out there in those smaller towns in Texas, you know, they showed up, and Texas still hasn't been flipped, but it's got close now. And I'm the panelist that's here from Georgia. And I mean, you know, I had seven members of my media family that live down here. There's so much pride. I mean, there's 4,000, you know, that he's ahead right now, and with 99% in. And, it's I mean, Georgia hasn't been flipped since 1992.
Yeah, you know, I think Clinton was the last years. One to flip. Yeah.
28 years. So, I mean, you know, you know, we are making a difference with Greg, my mother, my sister, myself, a few other family and friends. You know, this is an initiative that we started, and we're so thankful for the Walt Weekly podcast that you guys have promoted our cause. You know, in our small way, we believe that we made a difference and we flipped Georgia.
Yeah, no, we thank you. Yeah. We thank you guys for, you know, getting out there, getting the vote in. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in this predicament that we're in right now, you know?
Well, hey, this is hey, Chris. Walter, this is
I
Gene.
I want to say that.
This is Gene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gene. Yeah, Gene.
Yeah, I do thank that brother in Georgia. Please, if you see Stacey Abrams, give her a big hug, because she was the catalyst behind flipping Georgia blue. All right, give her
800,000 new registered voters since she lost, or since she was cheated 2 years ago and lost to Brian Kemp. She 800,000 voters that she registered, and you are 100% right, my brother. Made a huge difference. She is a champion for anti suppressing the vote. She's the best. I would love to give her a hug. Absolutely.
Yeah, this is Walt. Now, what about the mayor of Atlanta? She was a heavy contributor to getting out the vote.
Keisha Lance Bottoms. Yeah.
She's
out there, you know, and she's made a huge impact down here, because I mean she takes COVID personally. Her husband, and two of her children were all stricken with COVID-19, and you know, you saw them, you know, via television, going through their day to day battle, man, and fighting through it. She's really set up, so many free testing sites around the Metro Atlanta area. You know, sometimes you got to go through it yourself. I mean, let me just last say that I believe her battle and her struggle with COVID-19, unlike another person that you know, that said that they had it. You know.
Yeah, I hear you.
Right.
This is Chris. I wanna add something. Elections have consequences, right? And I think Stacey Abrams losing or being robbed changed the way Georgia looked at elections going forward, and it actually helped this time around. Her being robbed that time really changed the way those people in that state looked at things, and they got out there and they said that that wasn't going to happen to them again. And I want to salute them, because without Georgia and Philly and Pennsylvania, we're not having this conversation right now.
That's a good point, Chris.
Hey, Matt. Hey, Walter. It's Ernie.
Yeah.
So one of the things that's always been said before is that as African Americans, we're not a monolith, right? And basically, we're not one dimensional.
Right.
And I think that as voters, we're not one dimensional either. And what I mean by that is that between President Obama, being able to have Republicans who would vote to support him, right? And I think that this time around, we've also had Republicans who have supported Joe Biden. But I think also in the same aspect, you know, we have to look at the different demographics where we've had Democrats who have supported Republican candidates.
Right.
And so I think that we have to give credit where credit is due and being able to kind of unite everyone and not just sit there and believe that because someone was a Republican that they still voted for the current president, where they very well could have voted for a member of Congress, because as we can see that split over the different seats that had been lost or been, quote unquote, been flipped. They may have gone with another their party affiliate for a congressional seat or a local seat, but they still lent that vote towards the presidential candidate. And I think we have to be able to look at that as well and be able to applaud those and be able to look at things holistically versus just from one myopic point of view.
No, I agree. I agree with you. Yeah. I mean, there used to be a time, and I can go back maybe 6 years, all right? And I have friends that were, you know, that are Republican, but we disagreed on issues, but we were still buddies, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, you can have your issue and I got my issue. I may not agree with it, but we agreed to disagree. Basically, that's what I'm talking about. But that disappeared under Trump. All right. Instead of being friends, we don't talk to each other. Because one, you know, we disagree so heavily with the way Trump conducted himself in office. And secondly, we were afraid to even bring the subject up. So you had that tension between us. So, you know, if you're in a situation like that, it's just better just not, you know, not be in it.
Right. But but the one thing about that is that it's hard to not be in it, because everywhere we go, when we on the bus, at work, at the gym, you know, it's something that we can't escape. And it affects the way that we operate, the way that we live. I mean, the uncalled for rhetoric coming from a presidential podium, it impacts how we are. And so I think what makes people uneasy is the fact that you're trying to defend that. You can't defend the indefensible. You know,
right.
If something is wrong, it's wrong. And so therefore, but you don't want to be said, you don't want to be called wrong. So now you're taking it personal that I'm saying that what you're saying is wrong. But I'm not attacking you personally. I'm just attacking that point of view. Second, the principle. And I think that if we can get to that part of the conversation, we might be able to kind of mitigate some of that tension. Like, you got to eat the crow because you still trying to support this dude. But you know, we can get past that though. So I'm not attacking you. I'm just attacking the principle.
Yeah,
okay.
This is Greg. I think, you know, this year more than any, it was impossible not to speak to political issues when we're living the reality of an unqualified person in the White House. I mean, COVID has impacted us, and his mishandling of COVID. So you could not speak to something that was affecting you day to day. You know, every time we walk out with a mask, it reminds you got to think about why we're like this. And his presidency had a tremendous impact on us being like we are. And still are. So it's hard to see that guy across the street, you know, to have that regular conversation with the guy across the street that you know is a Republican, you know he backs Trump, but, you know, we just can't be civil. There's going to be some tension. So that made it, you know, a little different dynamic. You could hide behind it before, but you can't hide behind it this year.
No, you can't. I mean, that's my point. You know, we could talk politics, you know, and agree to disagree, all right, as gentlemen. But, you know, with Trump there, you know, he was so far to the right. He was past right. I don't know, is there a name for it? Right is right? Writer? You know, you can't talk to people that believe that night is day. And you're looking at the same thing and you see the opposite. The reality was just gone.
Walter, this is Gene.
Yeah.
As far as the 18% of black men that voted for Trump, I was talking to a good friend of mine, and she does well for a living. She's a software engineer. I think she makes somewhere close, if not upwards of $200,000. And I told her, I have friends that make over that $400,000 Biden tax plan. And I think a lot of black men that voted for Trump, they didn't vote to support Trump. They voted to protect their money.
I agree.
Because we have to remember, when people start making money, their moral compass will spin around in circles. It might even spin around backwards in a 360-degree circle. Because, you know, if you're making $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 a year, and then a presidential candidate says, if you make over $400,000, I'm going to raise your taxes, people start looking at their livelihood and most important, their lifestyle. So people are not voting. Well, not people, but the black men are not voting because they agree with Trump and his policies, but they're voting to protect their lifestyle. Whether you consider it right or wrong is entirely incumbent upon you. I'm just telling you, with men that make a good living, not necessarily wealthy, but make a really good living, that's what they're protecting. They're protecting their own interests. Whether, like I said, whether it be right or wrong to you, morally, you have to understand their purview.
No, I do. Yeah, I do understand it. All right, and I think 400,000 is too small a number. I think it should be 700,000. What is 400,000 in New York City if you got a family of five or six?
Not much.
That's what I'm saying. I think it should be higher. You know, 600,000, 700,000, 800,000. Right, he should cap it at 1,000,000. That's where it should be. You know, I don't agree with that 400,000 either. And I do agree that if you're making over 400,000, you're gonna say, well, this man's gonna take money out of my pocket, and I got to go with Trump. You know, I'm open to that as a rationale.
Unfortunately, in our community, and I'm not disagreeing, there just aren't that many people that are making $400,000 or more. I study that all day and night. There's just not that many,
To justify the 18%, you're right.
I beg to differ. You know, as far as that statistic. It's not prevalent in our community.
Was that a family number or was that an individual number?
I thought that was individual.
It was a national
statistic. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So it's an per individual, not family.
Hey, Walter, this is Gene again.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether that was Chris, Ernest, or Greg that talked about there not being that many black men making 400,000. Was that Chris? Sound like your voice.
No, that was Steven.
All right, Steven, welcome. This is my first time being on a panel with you. Welcome, brother. As the conversation with that sister that was a software engineer continued, she said that a lot of black men really went in hard when Biden chose U.S. Senator Kamala Harris as his running mate. And what she was trying to submit to me was that there is still too much misogyny in the black community. And I was like, wow.
Yes,
you know,
indeed.
You see all these posts on social media about lifting up queens and adjusting their crowns and protecting the black woman. But as soon as Kamala was anointed as the next vice president, a lot of black men went in on her. So maybe this 18% may not reflect that over 400,000 as Stephen has eloquently placed, but maybe it reflects the misogyny that exists in the black community. And with that, I'll digress.
This is Chris, and I agree wholeheartedly. I've had these conversations with a lot of my friends and people that I work with. They have a problem with her. a big problem. And I think they also, I think Trump tapped into these guys a little bit. He kind of made them feel like they had a place with him. I don't know how. I tried to get some of them to articulate their points to me on why they feel connected to him. But it always came back to, yeah, but her, she put a lot of people in jail. And I said, there's a lot of people in Congress and that have run for president that have put a lot of people in jail. Why are we so hard on her? And give me a few people that she put in jail that didn't belong there. Like, these people were criminals. Like, we're trying to make something there. I'm not saying she was perfect in her role, but she was far from the worst that we've seen. But they were so adamant about not liking her. It's crazy.
Well, yeah, but you know, then again, that Trump, this is Walter, that trumped the defund police type thing, because she was hard law and order. She's a law and order person.
Well, yes. I'm not going to make any excuses for Senator Kamala Harris. She built her career the way that she built her career. I mean, I've heard some of the disgusting things that, you know, she slept with the mayor, his last name was Brown of San Francisco.
He was the police commissioner.
I know he was an official, and that's her business. I mean, why are you always trying to put someone down in power? And it's just, I think it was absolutely disgusting the steps that she had to take to advance her career. I'm sure that some of them were on the backs of people of color, you know, and people that look like most of us. But the bottom line is that, you know, if the laws are in place, okay, she was there to enforce the law. She did not create.
That was her job. Yeah,
that was her job, and she was just doing her job to the best of her ability. I mean, you know, we can go back into Biden. I mean, there's so many brothers and sisters that would, you know, want to bring up that crime bill. I understand. Listen, I mean, I'm from New York, like many of the panelists here. I saw brothers that I knew from day one that went to jail for very, very lengthy sentences. The difference between 5 ounces of crack cocaine as compared to a half a kilo of cocaine, and, you know, all that stuff. I mean, people paid all types of ridiculous penalties. And look at the marijuana laws back then and now. I mean,
or the crack versus cocaine,
right? Well, that's
no,
that's
opioid.
That's the cocaine. Yeah, it's just ridiculous, and it disproportionately, hurt our community. But you know, this is what was the law at that particular time, and these people enforced it to the best of their ability. I mean,
okay, all right.
This is Michelle. I want to say something really quick in reference to Kamala Harris. My son Justin was a perfect example. He knew nothing about her except for her being a DA in California. You know, at the time when they had these strict laws against African Americans. But we had this conversation, was it last week? The week before, with Gene, and he was explaining the judiciary laws on why these laws were made at the time. And it wasn't just, you know, she was doing her job. You know, a lot of people in the community, the reverends, all of the people, the local officials, they all had to come up with something at the time for crack cocaine. But, you know, when they thought about it, you know, it did not benefit us as a community. You know, it just, you know, they broke up the Black family. So a lot of people are still hurt from that, but they don't understand, you know, the whole law behind it and why they did it. But, you know, now they're trying to reverse things, which is kind of too late because, you know, half of these people, their lives were taken from them or they're still serving time. So that's all I want to say.
This is Chris. Can I piggyback on that real quick?
Yes.
That crime bill, again, it wasn't just, it was a collective of people. Like, these communities were under siege at the time.
Right.
We all grew up in New York City, New York, it wasn't a nice place.
No.
Growing up in that era, it was tough. And people wanted something done.
Right.
The thing that, you know, because when I had this conversation with these guys and they bring up Kamala and they bring up that crime bill about Biden, I say to them, yes, they made mistakes, but at least people are admitting to those mistakes. They said that they would have done something different, unintentional, right? But why are we holding their feet to the fire so hard, and we're forgetting that this guy took out full page articles on the Central Park Five, and wanted the death penalty, and his family wouldn't rent. Why does he get a pass on that, and right. we still holding them accountable for the crime bill?
Right.
And this guy getting a pass. I said, and they couldn't answer that. They couldn't mm-hmm. answer it. And I said, you guys are going too hard. And why don't we give Kamala the benefit of the doubt that we giving all these other people?
Right.
I mean, why we got to go so hard on her and we're not going mm-hmm. hard on him? He took out those full page articles in every newspaper in New York City.
Mm-hmm. The Yusuf Hawkins case as well.
Mm-hmm. And he never apologized.
Right.
Never.
And he's the same person. He has not changed. And he still thinks the same. He still thinks the same as well. So.
Well, you know what? You know. Hey, everybody. This is Gene Edwards. Okay. If that's the case, there got to be a whole lot of apologies coming down, because you could Google this for yourself. Mm-hmm. Like I said, anytime you think I'm a liar, Google the information and then go on my Facebook page and call me a big fat liar. But Charlie Rangel, the beloved congressman out of Harlem, was one of the authors,
the orchestrator
of the crime bill, all right? Because he was trying to clean Harlem up.
Yeah. Right,
he didn't have a problem putting black men in jail that was selling crack cocaine. So there's a lot of blame to go around.
Right,
yep.
But you know what? I have to be honest. I was listening to a Trump rally from 2 weeks ago where he was in Wisconsin. And, you know, I always like his little punchline when he makes fun of, like, other elected officials. Like, he doesn't call Senator Warren. He calls her Pocahontas. Bernie Sanders is crazy Bernie. And then he calls former Vice President Joe Biden Sleepy Joe. He actually said that Joe Biden only knows where he is if he goes outside. If it's warm, he's in Florida. He's in Michigan. You know, man? He's just like, he's a clown. It's hilarious, but he focused in on the HBCUs, and he said that the presidents of these historical black college universities were coming to him every year looking for money. So what he did was he gave them an extended contract where they would have, you know, X amount of millions allocated to their schools without them having to come back every year. And that's the famous picture where they're all standing around Trump, and Kellyanne Conway is like on her knees on the couch.
Yeah, laying across,
and everybody's sitting there out there bootlicking and moonshining and stuff like that. But actually, what they did was cut a long-term deal with Trump. And so there are things that he has done. No, I didn't vote for him. No, I'm not advocating for him. But what I'm trying to submit is that, our circumstance hasn't changed. So when we fight for people, we have to make sure that the fight is going to be targeted to our community. Now, we know that Joe Biden was part of the crime bill, but like I said, there's enough blame to go around. We know that Kamala Harris was locking up black women because their children, most notably their sons, were truant in school, and we're supposed to just like turn a blind eye to all of that. Because right now, we don't have any of the choices. The choice is either Trump-Pence or Biden-Harris. And there are a lot of black people that don't like either choice, so they decided to sit it out. I tried to encourage them, but at the same time, but at the same time, I couldn't get mad at them for it, you know.
Hey, Gene, bottom dog online is that I didn't, have as much happiness in my heart because it was Joe Biden. I just had a lot of happiness in my heart because it wasn't him. Do I think that Joe Biden was the best choice? Absolutely not. But, you know, it's just the fact that Trump, and what he represents, you know, we go back to the beginning of the call with Chris illustrated that, you know, the Detroit and the Philadelphia. The tropes are continuous. That, you know, there are good people on both sides. This man is a blatant racist. All we have to do is look at his administration. You see nothing except Gentle Ben in the room at any time. I mean, bottom line is that
right. Nobody that represents us.
Yeah. Nobody.
And they didn't even put him on the table.
That's it. Yeah. So how am I
talking?
Let's be clear. Donald Trump is a direct result of the Democrats as well. They have to take ownership of why he's in office. They tried to force mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton down people's throats, mm-hmm. and they botched. They have a poor yep. messaging.
Yep.
There's a lot of reasons why he's in this office right now, and the Democrats need to take some ownership for it because he's there because of some of the things that they've done. You know, Hillary Clinton yeah. had a sense of entitlement to that office, and mm-hmm. it rubbed people the wrong way. They weren't taking the temperature in the room, and it cost them dearly. Four years of this.
I look at it like this. All right, if it wasn't for George W. Bush, there would not have been President Barack Obama. If it wasn't for President Barack Obama, there wouldn't have been Donald Trump. So, I mean, I can draw a straight line between the swings and those. But don't forget that we have, all right, I heard somebody say, just finish my point.
No, that was go ahead. That's Ernest.
Yeah, all right.
Go ahead.
All right, just finish my point. Now, without, there was a clear choice, either Trump for four more years or Biden, okay? As we look at it holistically, the first battle, and this is the beginning of the war started some months ago, all right, on us trying to attain the equality that we're looking for. The first battle was this election. All right, get rid of Trump. All right, and that would hurt the white supremacists in some way, form or whatever. All right, next step is to move on and continue our protests and be able to come up with a set of demands. All right, because we need to restructure our union. That's what we need to do. Okay, so first step, if Biden wins, fine. We got rid of, we wounded, you know, our adversaries. That, I mean, for lack of a better term, right. We wounded our adversaries. Mm-hmm. All right, so.
But Walter, this is Gene. It still comes down to the local elections. I'm actually paying more attention to the House and the Senate more than right. I am to the delegates, because really, if we don't control the Senate, then we still don't control a damn thing.
We're stuck.
And we need right. We need to control the House. I don't know how many of you all actually live in New York City, but if you've been paying attention to Richie Torres, Congressman-elect, he's been going after the NYPD and some of these racist rants they've been putting on social media. And he's been outing these people, you know, whether they're talking about misogyny against women or talking about being racist against Black and Latino, calling them animals, or whether they're going after the LGBTQIA community. Richie Torres has been on TV at least five times within the last 2 months, outing senior members of the NYPD. Most recently today, he outed the chief of the Bureau for the Equal Opportunity Employment Division. This guy is making fun of Blacks, Latinos, women, and gays. And he's in charge of the Equal Opportunity Employment Division of the NYPD. So that's why
no longer.
Well, that's why it's important to have your district leader, your assembly member, your city council member, your state senator, your congress member, your U.S. senator. Like, all of that matters way before we get to the presidential level. All the other stuff matters, and that's all I've ever tried to impress upon people. Local, you know what? It was Tip O'Neill, former Speaker of the House under Ronald Reagan. You know what Tip O'Neill said? Tip O'Neill said all politics is local.
Right.
That says it right there. That says it right there.
Okay.
I agree with you. I agree with you a lot, Gene. You know, it's definitely, I've said it many times on here. This is Greg. Many times on this show that the local races are just as important as the national races. But I think now we come to a point, okay, like Walter said, job one was getting Trump out of there. Job number two, to me, is establishing an agenda that makes the party that's in the White House now accountable to what we need and what we want. The changes have to be made. Like, Trump has only been in for the last 4 years. We've had these issues for the last 20 and 30.
Yeah, that's correct.
Right.
You know what I mean? So now, instead of just a whole lot of lip service, and yes, I can understand why people feel that the Democratic Party just takes us for granted. They'll get our votes, but then not actually put plans in action to turn some stuff over. Now, we have to set the agenda, and it's probably locally. We have to make sure that the people that we have elected locally are gonna implement some change that benefits our community. Not folks that are making $400,000 a year or more, but our communities.
Right.
That's gonna make some changes in the street. And I'm not saying that they're not doing it, but we have to hold them accountable. We have to make that happen now. We can't just be, because I think, you know, when Obama went into office, we said, okay, we got a brother in office. Now he's going to, you know, he's going to make everything happen magically. We sat back and let it happen. It showed in 2016 when we didn't even go out and vote. We were sitting on our butts and we didn't go out and vote. Now we're awake again. What are we going to do?
Yeah, what's the next step? Well, you know?
That's true. I think Ernest had something to say earlier. Go ahead, Ernest.
Yeah. Well, I had to make a list, so I won't go back too far.
Oh, okay.
But it's okay. So I think we're in line with what Greg was just saying. I think part of the issue is not about whether it's the president or anybody on the ticket. I think the issue comes from the community itself. Many of us are not involved with the democratic process beyond voting.
Yeah.
We have to come up with a community agenda in order to present it to the elected officials on whatever level it might be. And because we lack the involvement in that particular process is the reason why people sit there and say, well, President Obama did more for the LGBTQI plus community than he did for the Black community. That's not true. The LGBTQ plus community organized on every level and presented that information that made it to Congress, made it to the president's desk in order for him to sign for it. So it has nothing, it has very little to do with the individuals who are in office, because one, they should be of and from our communities to begin with. So they therefore they should be intimately involved with what our issues are, and therefore they're there to simply represent. When you have individuals like Gene, like Greg, like Stevie and Chris, who organize locally in their communities, we throw that information up there and sit there and say, hey, we need you to handle this. And it gets handled. And that's part of the reason why we don't do it. The other thing I wanted to say is some of the things that when we engage, whether it's conversation or whether it's decision making, we allow our feelings to take over. Feelings are emotions. Emotions are meant to be managed, not acted on. And so oftentimes we feel a certain way, and that becomes how we feel is a real feeling, but it's not the reality of the situation. So in sense of where it comes down to, like he mentioned about Hillary Clinton and mentioned about Kamala Harris, and the term misogyny got thrown out there.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. The term misogyny got thrown out there. So here's the thing. Why is it misogyny for Kamala Harris, but it wasn't for Hillary Clinton? And I'm not suggesting that either one is right. I don't believe that. I believe that you can be like, we can hold individuals accountable to a higher standard. I think it's wrong to do it that way. For example, I think that as African Americans, we have to show a whole body of work before we're hired for a position where somebody of a different hue can be hired based upon their potential. And so therefore, they're not scrutinized nearly as hard as we are. And sometimes I think maybe Kamala might have been subjected to that particular standard where it was a higher standard. President Obama was held to that same standard as well. He was held to a higher standard than we have when it comes down to the current president of the United States. So I think that there is some give where there is some unfairness there, but I don't think that we should, one, should demonize a sex or a demographic of individuals based upon a dislike that they have, unless we actually pose the question to them and find out why that it is before we label them a certain way.
Okay. Yeah. I agree with that. But the original question had to do with $400,000. It's great.
Yeah.
And that's the reason a lot of black men, not a lot of black men, but a certain percentage of black men voted for Trump. All right, but I happen to think that $400,000 is not a lot of money. Okay, not that I made $400,000. No, I'm retired, so I don't make $400,000. No, but in living in New York.
But you're from New York City.
That's what I'm saying. You know?
You're from New York City.
Yeah,
you know, $400,000 is not a lot of money in New York City, in Boston, Massachusetts, in Washington, D.C., Miami, Florida, in San Francisco, California. I can tell you parts of the country, $400,000 ain't nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Some places, it's a nice little penny, you know? Some places it is.
Yeah, but I would, you know, living in New York, I would think that it should like be, the ceiling should be like $1 million, or the floor should be like $1 million. Okay? That's because of where I live, all right, and what I've seen. Okay. So, you know, as far as Joe Biden winning, one, you know, he's a win for us. And we should be in a position, just like when you mentioned the LGBTQ community coming up with grievances during President Obama, and then delivering and said, look, this is what we would like. This is what we want to see. And some of them were acted upon, okay? I mean, I think that with Biden, if he does get elected, and a lot of things are still up in the air right now, okay? But when he does, it's official and it's in that. We should have a list of grievances, okay? Because we put him in office. We helped put him in office. So we should use the leverage that we have now while the fire is hot. Any comments on that?
Go
ahead, guys.
No, I just want to say one thing real quick. You know, and to piggyback on your question is, do you think because, you know, Trump tried to highlight and he's always tried to highlight, you know, things that he's done, quote unquote, for the black community, that will put pressure on Biden and Harris in this administration more than it would otherwise? That's the question.
Yeah. I mean,
it should.
Yeah, this is Walter, right? And I think that the name of the game, and especially in business, or anywhere you go, what have you done for me lately? All right, he had a crime bill. Okay, he made a mistake. Blah blah blah. But what are you going to do for me now? And that's the way we should look at him.
Yeah, I agree. This is Chris. Can I add something though, real quick?
Yeah, of course.
We gotta keep in mind too, This guy got 69 million votes. Yeah. It took a Herculean effort by Biden to beat him. Like, it's not like he got his behind whooped. I mean, this is close. So it's going to be hard work even if Biden wins, because a lot of the country is not with him.
Yeah, you're breaking up, Chris.
It's going to take...
Yeah.
I was just saying, a lot of the country is divided. They're not with whoever's going to win, either one of them. You know, one guy's got 74 million votes and the other guy's got 69 million. Like, it's a lot. You know, Trump got a lot of people to vote for him. So that says a lot of people like what's going on in this country right now.
A lot of racism.
I tell you what, and this is Walter, I tell you what is going on in this country, and it's very dangerous. We're at a point.
Walter.
Yeah. Yeah, Gene.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
If COVID-19 never hit, what would the numbers look like? Do you think Biden would still be ahead if COVID-19 never hit? Because I'm of the mind that even if Trump loses, when we revisit this in another 4 years, whoever the Republican candidate is, if Trump campaigns for that person, we've seen his rallies. We've seen it, man. They love him. Whoever he campaigns for is going to be a problem for Joe Biden. Especially
Trump is a player.
Once COVID-19 is out the way. So the question I have for the panel is, do you think the numbers would reflect the same if COVID-19 never hit? And I'll sit back and listen.
First off, Donald Trump in 4 years will be sitting next to Bill Cosby. So that right there, you know, we're going to pull him out.
We hope right so, there. Yes.
It's no doubt. You know, there's so many doggone indictments coming.
Yeah, this is Stevie, right?
Him and Bill will be telling stories. Yeah, this is Steve. Absolutely. So, you know, as far as COVID, you know, you just asked a great question, Gene, because had there not been a COVID crisis, even after impeachment, even after all the things that he done, I have absolutely no idea if we'd be in the position that we're in today. So that's a great question. You know, when you sit back and think about it.
I would say definitively no. I would say beyond a shadow of a doubt, no, because I think that as a country, we have an apathetic approach to how we deal with issues. I think that because there was the emphasis placed on mail-in voting, and as well as even the rhetoric to get people not to vote or talk about the fraudulent approaches and things of that nature, I think with all of that coupled into it, promoted and kind of move people to actually at least send in their ballots to vote. For all of us who have organized in areas and had these ridiculous conversations with individuals who say, well, my vote don't count, I ain't voting, or I ain't registered to vote, and this, that, and the third, like, we've all had those conversations. I think that if COVID did not occur and those mail-in ballots wasn't in some states automatically mailed or easily obtained, I'm not sure that it would be as close as it is right now.
So what are you saying? Hey, Trump would have won?
This is great.
This is Chris. I think he would have won. I think Trump would have won hands down. Hands down. COVID was the match that lit the fire under people, and they needed something to be lit under them. Ernest is right. Had we not have COVID, I'm telling you, this guy would have won. He's got 69 million votes. He would have won.
He just crossed 70. I'm sitting there looking at it. 70 million.
That's nothing to sneeze at. That's a lot of people.
Nothing to sneeze at. Yeah, a lot of people.
Yeah.
This is Greg. I agree wholeheartedly that I don't think, if it wasn't for COVID, Trump would still be looking at another 4 years. But what I say, touching the other point that somebody brought up, I think... Okay, he might be locked up somewhere within the next 4 years, but Trump started a movement, and that movement will take another face. And we, you know, people have to be ready for that movement. This, like you said, you know, he's got 70 million votes. That thing ain't dying. So they're going to look for another face. Could it? It could be Ivanka.
Right. There's always someone to follow him. Yep.
Jared, Eric, Donald Jr. Folks are going to rally behind him just because they come from his brand.
Yeah, you're breaking up.
That brand won. That brand. Okay. That brand won, and they'll rally behind it.
And they'll be buying up a bunch of guns along the way because they've, you know, it's that they're constantly acting like there's an Armageddon that's coming in the country. And
well, they won't be the only ones.
Yeah,
they won't be the only ones because this year alone, right, Walter, we did a show on gun show. The majority of this year during COVID that purchased guns were Black, African American. So they're getting ready too.
Well, you know, this is Walter. You know, we're pushing up against the clock, but I do want to bring out one point to the panel, is that the election is so close. We got basically a split in the country, and that split down, you know, ideological lines. I don't see, you know, the first thing our enemy looks at is, you know, can I divide these people? Can I divide this army? You know, how can I divide them? And this country is weakened, believe it or not, because we are split almost down the middle.
That's the truth.
So we're weak. I mean, we're going to be staggering soon. You know, the whole thing may come down because we are positioning ourselves for failure as a country.
Yes, but that's been something that's been, this is earnest. This is something that's been in the works, as I think it was alluded to earlier before, that's been in the works for years.
Yeah.
A lot of these things have just been resurfaced as a result of the rhetoric that was allowed to being able, because I mean, you have to understand, they submitted in 2015 to allow for him to become the nominee. So they understood what was happening. And I think to Greg's point, I'm not sure whether or not if anybody within the Trump family will be able to take it over immediately. Because I don't think that everyone that we've seen is built like that. The person who's the dark horse would be Barron. Because we haven't seen him, but he's like 15, 16. But in another, you know,
he's special. I doubt it.
10 years, yeah. I mean, I doubt it too. But what I'm saying though is that I'm not sure whether or not they have a real true leadership when it comes down to being able to maintain this type of movement and rhetoric going along. But digressing to the fact that I think that it's important for us to be able to, within our own communities, re-educate our communities, be able to talk about things, tangible goals, and being able to start getting with Congressman-elect Torres and whomever else in New York or North Carolina or wherever you are, and start bringing those things up, the change.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree. Anybody else?
Yeah.
This is Chris. I think the Republican Party is the party of Trump now. And if he loses and he's not in jail, he will be a major player going forward for the Republican Party.
I heard somebody mention that Trump should run in 2024.
I mean, he's going to be 80.
That wouldn't surprise me.
He's going to be 80. He's got that work. Yeah, absolutely.
After he does his time, he probably will. There's no qualifications for being a president anymore. So after he does his time, he comes out, he can run again.
Yeah, he didn't do 8 years, so he can run again.
Yep.
Yeah, even with a record.
He's batshit crazy now. You had another 4 years, he'd be worse than ever.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
especially with COVID in his brain. You know what I mean? I don't mean to, you know, hey, forgive me, but
he's co-opted the Republican Party, though. It's his party.
It's the people. Almost 50% of the people believe in this man. That's what I'm saying. That is the scary
mindset of these people. All right? though.
That's one out of two.
That shows you. Yeah, well, you know, they want to make America great again.
So one out of two.
He brought that
that's
out.
50-50. Mm-hmm. I mean, between that's yeah. night and day. And you know, the, right. the strategy beating Sensu, and I know all y'all guys right. probably read him. You know, one of the major strategies is divide and conquer. And we're divided. So we're just waiting for someone like the Chinese or something just to conquer us because we split. And we're weak. I keep saying it. We're weak. I don't know what's coming next, but that is my opinion.
Somebody just said he'll be he'll be a major player even in jail. Probably.
We are vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah. Someone said I think he'll be a major player from jail.
Right.
All right. But anyway.
He's been a major player for a long time.
Yeah.
Behind the
yeah,
scenes.
There's always going to be someone that, you know, if they any type of organization that they have.
Well, it's time for hit. It's time for Hitler to fall.
Yeah, so. But it's going to be somebody that's going to step in. This is, mm-hmm. you know, someone to step in for Trump. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, guys. So we pushing up against the clock. I keep saying that. All right. We will, this podcast will be, rebroadcast on Sunday after 3 p.m.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Walter. And thank you to our panel guests for joining our Friday Live and supporting the Walt Weekly. I want to break these gentlemen down each by individually. Our public servant, Gene Edwards, 79th Assembly District in the Bronx, New York. Ernest J. Robertson, Sr., consultant at B. Ernest Leadership out of Washington, D.C. We have Greg Coleman out of North Carolina, CEO of Illumination Media and Technology. We have also Stephen A. Smith out of Atlanta, Georgia, educator, second chance business, funding, and credit specialist. And I definitely want to shout out Christopher Sweeney. He is a New York City retired sanitation worker, and also shout him out. He is starting his own business, CEO of Johnny Roos Catering. Finally, this is going to be a great year for him. Yes.
Yeah, buddy.
Yes, and I would please everyone's social media pages up there. Please follow these gentlemen. They're all businessmen, entrepreneurs. Patronize them. Also, we have a new website. Thanks to these gentlemen for bringing us to the point that we are at right now, www.thewaltweekly.com. With the help of Greg Coleman, we appreciate you, Greg, so much for helping us get this website together. Yes, and all the gentlemen, please, guys, send me your bios. Look at the website. If there's something erroneously on there, please send me what you would like. Gene, everyone, thank you. Follow us on our IG and social media pages at thewaltweekly.com. Streaming platforms, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify. Guys, we are on iHeartRadio. Everyone have a safe and blessed weekend. Follow, like, and share The Walt Weekly.
Excellent. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you. God bless you all.
All right. Good have night, a nice
guys.
Weekend.
Good night, guys. Right.
Thank you.
Great. Right. Great awesome.
Peace.
Yes.